Welcome back to the Smuggler's Den. This is our fifth episode, if you can believe it. I'm your host, Tiny Grimes, and today I'm joined by...
As always, Ben Tully. I go by Scarlet Knight on the boards.
And I wanted to start by saying that we have actually got a Facebook page now for the podcast. So if you're interested in liking us and reading our biographies, and we're going to be posting outtakes from the show there, you can go to the Smuggler's Den Facebook page. Now, if anyone out there actually knows how to turn MP3 files into a file that can be posted on Facebook, please do email the show at smugglersdenpodcast@gmail.com, as we are not as technically savvy as we might like to be. The second thing I wanted to cover before we get on to our in-depth content is we started a Star Wars League. So, Ben, how would you say our league has been after the first week that we've met?
Oh, I think it's been great. We had 11 people sign up for it, and that's not everybody who is there every week. I think we are at least planning another 2 to 3, maybe 4 people. Just us sitting there for the whole night playing Star Wars, so we were taking up several tables in a fairly large gaming space at the local game store. We had people come up at the end of the night and was like, hey, we saw you playing this game. You know, what's it about? We tried to explain how cheap it was to get into it and how, you know, there weren't that many cards and we'd only been playing for a couple weeks. And so, you know, overall, I was really impressed with our turnout and how much fun everybody seemed to be having, kind of just trading around and playing the game over and over again.
Yeah, I agree. I think as advice to others looking to start a league, one of the keys is to have a really low price point to get into the league. So we have a league kit that we're going to give out as prizes, but we made the entry fee only $5 just to make sure that those who are, say, new to LCGs and are thinking, this might be a bit much for me, I'd be willing to give it a try if it was cheap. This gives them a nice point to be able to get into the league.
And the price point makes it pretty nice because it also encourages people not to just come and play one time and never show up again.
It's nice that's a new LCG because you can just say, someone can come up, look at what we're doing and say, oh, wow, there's a Star Wars game? That's cool. And we can say, yeah, there's a league. And all you really need is one core set to jump in because, look, that guy over there has actually won 2 games tonight with a single core set. If by any chance you're looking for more information on how to start a league or you're interested in our rules and how we're running our league, feel free to email us at smugglersdenpodcast@gmail.com.
And don't think that we actually have a secret already pre-released FAQ to answer all the questions of, like, in a tournament, do you just play light side? Do you just play dark side? Or, you know, what are these rulings and all these types of things? We don't. We've made up a couple of our rules to go along. And because it's a league and over a course of a couple weeks, it's slightly more open in terms of the timing it takes that you need to play both sides of the force, but it doesn't all have to be one night at one time in a Swiss-style format.
Yeah, and we are hoping and praying that an FAQ comes before the league-ending tournament arrives so we can get a little more guidance on how to actually do it for real.
I'm just hoping we get it before regionals.
That would be great. Okay, Ben, so last week we gave our secret away. We told everyone our vaunted Jedi deck that we had built. And so now the question is it a vaunted deck or is it just a deck that we used to play?
So the Jedi deck is still the deck I play with every time so far and have had amazing success with it at this point in time. To the point where I'm pretty sure over the last 2 weeks of playing, since we released it and since we kind of like settled on that's what we were going to, you know, we thought was the best, I have only lost one game. And it was 2U playing a Sith deck, and I'm pretty sure, and I can't maybe I'm wrong on this, but I'm pretty sure I had terrible card draw luck that turn, or that game, where the game was pretty much over by the fourth turn. There's nothing I could do. You had it in the bag from the beginning. But other than that, I have not lost with it. What about yourself?
I've had the same results. I've played a lot of games on Octagon the last couple weeks because you can play them fairly quickly. And I'd say I'm about 25-1 with it, my only loss being to you as well. And not only that, but games where I thought there's no way I can win this. Like someone played the Devastator turn 1 against me. And I was like, holy cow, This deck does not have a great way to handle it. Jedi Mind Trick doesn't touch it. It was no problem. The dial only got to 6 and I crushed him. And it's just that deck where it has answers to everything and has all these tricks. Even when you get behind, I don't feel like I'm ready to give up. With the Sith deck, I feel like if I get way behind, I'm in huge trouble. The Jedi deck, I never really have that feeling.
A lot of the games that I played with the Jedi deck have now started to run together because we're filming this, or we're recording this, you know, 5 days after our last play session, and that means it's 12 days since the second to last one. And so it's a little fuzzy, but most of the time I felt like what would happen is the dark side would put out a bunch of stuff and would be doing okay, and then it would just all start to click. You would have the right number of protectors and the best way to keep characters on the board. And all of a sudden I had, you know, Yoda and Luke and then Han and Obi-Wan and, you know, just these different character combinations that all seemed to work. You know, once they're on the table, they seem to persist much better and gotten used to that play style of direct damage from the Sith and things like that, that have made it much more versatile. Made the deck's versatility really comes out and shines in that situation.
Yeah, I think my greatest win with the deck was against a Navy deck in which by turn one, I think he had about 6 characters out because he was able to put out resource characters to put more out. By the end of turn two, he had about 10, and by the end of turn three, he had 13. And in that time, I was drawing no good characters. So my base was like 2 Guardians, a Twi'lek Advisor, and some other pretty terrible character. And I was still somehow able to use all my tricks to hold off and, you know, until about turn 7 when I finally drew a Luke, and then turn 8 I drew a Han, and I was able to push it through. And I think the dial got all the way to 11, and it took like an hour and a half to play the game. But I was able to slow the game down to the point where I could wait out getting my big boppers.
I have not seen anything in the deck that has made me want to make any changes to it so far.
Yep, same here. So I think we are still on the page of this looks like the best light side deck in the meta. But here's the problem. So we've identified what we think is the best light side deck in the meta. Do we really want to play this deck over and over and over and over? Or do we want to start trying other things?
Well, I think it's one of those questions that you kind of have to answer personally. I don't personally think that we have exhausted everybody else in our personal meta. We haven't exhausted it into the point where they're convinced that it's the best deck, and we haven't exhausted it to the point where they're like, ugh, they're playing their Jedi deck that has Han in it. You know, might as well give up now. They can just have the free win. I mean, I don't think it's you know, it's a problem. We have done some experimenting beforehand. So to start saying I'm ready to start experimenting again, I don't know if I'm there yet.
All right, fair enough. I would say because I've played so many games online, I've actually gotten a little bit bored with the deck. Since I haven't lost with it, since frankly most of the games aren't even close, I decided I wanted a Rebel deck. Now, I think the Rebel decks aren't that good, but I've decided to try to challenge myself to do something interesting, to find something that's playable that I can play with maybe some of the newer members of our league. And so I thought I'd briefly lay out an idea that I came up with. And what it basically consists of is lots of big dudes. So it runs the Jedi affiliation. It runs Luke's pod, Home One's pod, Red Five's pod, Red Two's pod. So I also decided to add pod number 14, which is Decoy at Dantooine, which I've often thought this is an utterly terrible pod. The objective, I think, is pointless, and it has a lot of bad cards in it, but it has 2 cards that I'm interested in. One is A New Hope, and that is a 2-cost light side reset. It's an action that can be used in any phase rather than the dark side's reset, which can only be used in the force phase. And it basically says you can choose 3 units on the table and keep them. All others go back to your hand. And so my thought was this. I'll put out some big characters. I won't be playing as many because I'm playing big characters. I'll be able to play A New Hope in a number of different ways. I can use it to reset the board. I can use it as a trick where I attack, let's say they have Vader, the Protector, and then a whole bunch of Chuds, and they defend with some Chuds, thinking, oh, I'll kill the Y-Wing with my two Chuds automatically. I play a New Hope, and they have a real decision here. Do I return my good big cards to my hand, or do I return the Chuds that I was supposed to block the Y-Wing with? And so that makes them have a difficult decision. And then I'm playing Fall Back in that pod, which I can use for a number of ways. Let's say they use Vader and they force choke Luke, do the second damage with Vader's react. I can play Fall Back before they can actually finish off Luke with some other trick. Or my favorite trick, attack with a Y-Wing, win the edge battle. He does his two objective damage. You know he's going to die. He only has one health. You play Fall Back, bring him to your hand. Next turn, he comes out. I'm not saying this is a great deck. What I'm saying is it's another different, interesting approach to playing the light side.
And how have you found in playing with this deck? You know, it sounds like you've probably tried it a couple times on Octagon. I haven't seen you play it yet head-to-head. How have you been feeling in terms of success rate? Do you feel like those tricks are enough to make it, you know, strong, or is it?
I think it might be a terrible deck.
Oh, good.
I played it once. It looked like I was just getting slaughtered. Like I dropped a Y-Wing or two turn one. I couldn't attack with them. They would just instantly die because I didn't have enough cards for the edge battle. I didn't draw anything good for a couple turns. The dial got to 8 before I really did much. He had about 10 characters set up, maybe 12. But then I started drawing stuff. I got a Luke. Just went in blindly with him, killed something, knocked down an objective a little bit. Then the next turn, I got red 5, attack with him, drew a New Hope, reset the board a bit. And it's basically this deck where it's attrition. You just keep throwing yourself at the dark side with all your blast icons, trying to throw all their cards back to their hand to where they have to discard them. What was really neat about it is he never drew his Vader, and he kept complaining. Ah, I'm not drawing Vader. And I said, well, it's been like 3 turns since you got to draw anything because right. I keep using a New Hope and sending all your cards back to your hand and you don't get to draw.
I think that would be a really huge blow to any deck, you know, especially a Sith deck where you maybe might be waiting for Palpatine or Vader to come out. Or in some cases where I always seem to be in when I'm playing is I have Vader, but I never see a force choke. All 4 of them sit somewhere else at the bottom of my deck, and I'm kind of drawing, hoping to start being able to do some damage. And so if you're not drawing because you have to discard down with the extra characters that you have in your hand, I mean, that would be, I would be pretty frustrated playing against that.
Yeah, that's what I was hoping the deck was going to be. But for about 6 turns, it was doing nothing. It just sat there. And my opponent was like, you're not going to do anything? I was like, well, I keep drawing bad cards, which is half the deck. So, no, I guess not.
So it's one of the limits. You think it has less to do potentially with the fact that the cards and the strategy is good. But one of the shortcomings of when you build a deck, especially in the Star Wars card game, that you have to include all of these cards that you would normally not include if you could pick them one at a time.
Definitely. And the other problem is, like, a Jedi deck has that built-in synergy. You have the Protector who only protects characters, but the whole deck is characters. And all these things work together. Whereas in this particular deck, there's really good characters like Luke. So let's say I get in my hand a Double Strike and a Trust Your Feelings, and then I have Home 1, Red 2, some Y-Wings, and R2-D2. These cards don't go together, but they're all awesome. So it's really hard to say, oh, I'll discard my Trust My Feelings, when I know that if I can get Luke and stick Trust Your Feelings on it, wow, he's just going to rip them apart in one turn.
So what you're describing, Tiny, doesn't seem to me on paper. You know, I'm sitting here thinking about the pods that you have in there as a bad deck. And I'll be pretty interested to see how, you know, come Wednesday when we play this week, you know, if you play against a couple people, including myself, maybe using the Sith deck, and some of the newer players and the middle of the ground players that we have in our meta, to see how well it does over time. Because you know, I've mentioned this to you a couple times, is that there have been plenty of games where I've played against Rebel decks and thought to myself, oh, this is going to be pretty easy. It's a Rebel deck. I'm playing my Sith deck. I know how well this does. And then really come close, like really felt like it was like, if I hadn't been for this card or if it hadn't been for this play right here, like the game would have gone in the other direction. I can think of a couple examples from just this past week where the real key card for the Rebel player was actually the Ewok Scouts. And I know we've talked about the pod here in general, and I think personally the pod is fairly weak because of the cards that they make you include, but the Ewok Scouts are crazy. I mean, I had a pretty slow draw. I wasn't seeing a lot of characters. I could only get a couple on the table at a time. You know, he didn't have the Ewok Scouts on the table, so I only left one. I left the Devastator unfocused, ready to defend against his Y-Wings, and all of a sudden there's an Ewok Scout on the table, and I couldn't do anything to stop it. You know, it was like, oh, and now I can't defend with my Devastator. This is really frustrating.
Yeah, it's funny because a bunch of the people in our meta are, I don't want to say not quite as competitive as us, but they haven't researched the cards as thoroughly as us and are still using the Ewoks. And I don't like to say you shouldn't use the Ewok pod. It's just not good. But I think looking at efficiency, there are just too many cards in the pod that aren't good enough. So it makes it, when someone does play it, doubly shocking because you're not expecting it. And the Ewok is really good. And so it's really frustrating when someone throws that down on you and you're like, oh no, now they're just going to blow right through.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's crazy to some degree. I think that, and it makes sense why it's limit one per deck, but I think that if you could have two copies of the Ewok objective in your deck, that it would probably be an auto include in most light side decks because they're that strong, but just the inconsistency, you know, drawing a Yub-Yub without an Ewok, without an enhancement to target, is kind of, you know, problematic in a lot of ways. The objective works really well with nice synergy with the individual Ewoks, but, and so that you can replay them and have them coming back out and frustrating your opponent over and over again. But at the same time, you know, how often do you see one, it's a 1 out of 10 to get that objective, and then a 1 out of 25 to see an Ewok. So, I mean,
yeah.
You know, you're running into that problem. And, you know, I just think, you know, people want to give them a chance. People love Ewoks. I mean, whatever your feeling on how that, you know, the Ewoks affected Star Wars canon, you know, there are a lot of people out there who love Ewoks.
Yep, I agree. And that objective is really strong. I had someone have that out there. And then suddenly the Ewok with only one damage capacity isn't as bad. You know, I burn the Ewok. I think what happens, I burn the Ewok. Then I knocked out their objective. They put out their new objective. It's the Ewok objective. And boom, the Ewok's right back. And right. I was just thinking, oh my goodness. I thought now there was only one more left in the deck. But really, this Ewok's coming out every single turn. So now for the rest of the game, Vader can never block. And that's a really scary idea.
It is. They're good. I mean, they're good. They're good in a bunch of situations. But as you were just mentioning, and kind of where this segued from a little bit, was that, you know, the synergy just isn't quite there with the starter for the lion side of things. It's just a little bit off. It's almost good. It's almost like really strong, but it's just not quite there.
Yeah, one way that I tried to fix it for my deck, and this is something that one of our listeners asked us about, is how do you know when to attack? So with the Jedi deck, it's really this balancing act of, okay, how many control cards do I have in my hand? How many protectors do I have out? If I attack with Luke, is Luke going to die? Or can I absorb this damage or deflect the damage? And it's really picking and choosing your right moments. And you don't really have that many blast icons. Han only has the one. It's edge dependent.
Obi-Wan only has one. Yoda only has one that's edge dependent. Luke has one that's not edge dependent and one that is. There's not a lot.
Right. So there's not that many guaranteed blast icons. So I built a deck that had tons of guaranteed blast icons. So for instance, Red 5 has 3 blast icons. So all I have to do is attack win edge, and I do 3 damage. Whether or not Red 5 dies, that's besides the point. I'd rather he didn't. But if every turn you're dropping dudes with 1 to 2 blast damage icons, if you think about that, you can knock out objectives really fast. And if one of them is home one, you're damaging other objectives at the same time. So it seems to me that if you're going to play the Rebels, you either need to do one way, which is like the Leia tricks control, which I don't think is consistent enough. I think some games you're going to get that to work and it's going to be amazing. And then plenty of games you're going to get half the combo and get crushed. It seems like the other way is the as many blast icons as you can pack in, and just every turn is a kamikaze attack. You're like, okay, here come my dudes. What are you going to do? They all crushed you with their various blast icons. The problem is that seems to really only work against Sith, who also doesn't have many blast icons, and they're not going to counterattack. Now against Navy, I think if you do that, they're probably just going to turn around and start knocking out your objectives.
I haven't actually seen a well-thought-out, constructed Navy deck. I mean, I've seen people who've been like, oh, I'll throw these pods together and see how they do, and it probably hasn't done that well. I think what, you know, if somebody sat around and did a similar thing to what you're doing with this Alliance deck, where they sat down and they're like, how many, you know, blast objective damage icons can I get on there? Which cards would I need to use? What's the optimum way of getting these various cards out that I need? It'd be interesting to see, because I feel like when you have a battle like that, right, when you do an engagement, and it can't be just all blitz and then all blitz back, which, as an aside, probably favors the light side. When you actually have to think about attacking, defending, and everybody only has one health icon or one health capacity and all of these things, I think that would actually probably feel like a really big Star Wars battle in terms of thematically for the game. And I haven't actually ever thought about it before, because I've been concentrating so much with, you know, you on Sith and Jedi and how much that, I mean, that feels thematic, but in a different way. It feels much more like the prequels, not that I ever want to reference the prequels in any way, where it happens a little slower and there's a little bit of, there's intrigue and counter intrigue and that type of feel to it. But I would really like to see a battle between a really well-constructed Alliance and a really constructed, well-constructed Navy deck to see how that actually played out.
Yeah, I would too. I actually think it might favor Navy in that the Alliance has such low damage capacity and not many unit damage icons. I'm kind of afraid that if they met head-to-head, Navy would kill all of the Alliance guys.
Except that you're forgetting that light side only has to take out 3 objectives. And with the Navy, if they take out 3 objectives and haven't done anything to increase the dial over a couple turns, they're still one objective away from winning.
Yes, that's true. And that's where it would come into, if the Navy can put out enough guys to where they can, you know, blitz with the Devastator and bump the dial up extra and get Tarkin out and make them take less damage to kill them, and then leave back a couple unit damage guys, I think it could win. But you're definitely right that if it was just like dark side all in, light side all in, the light side wins that just because of having to destroy less. But that's not how I'm envisioning it going.
No. So maybe that's what we should work on, you and I. Work on well thought out Alliance and Navy decks just to see how they play against each other, just for the fun of it. And then crush them both with the Jedi deck or the Jedi Sith deck.
I think we have a new plan.
We'll be.
What I wanted to do next was a pod review of the Cruel Interrogations pod. This is something that I've been looking at and have been for a while. What it comes down to is, in my opinion, there are 4 pods that I'm going to run 2 copies of each in every Sith deck I play. That's Vader's pod, Palpatine's pod, Mahdi's pod, and pod 20, which is Council of the Sith, allowing you to draw cards, Advisor to the Emperor, which gives you tactics icons and resources, Dark Precognition, which might be my favorite card, a Sith Library, a Twist of Fate. Essentially, to me, it's a given in every Sith deck. So what you're left with is, what is the last pod? And if you've been paying attention to what I've been running lately, what I had been running was the Espo Trooper pod, and the one where you get your draw cap up to 7.
What both Tiny of, means there is reconnaissance mission.
Yes, both of them neutral pods. And the Espos were in there specifically to handle the blaster enhancement. But as we've gotten a little bit more experience, a little bit better at the game, I've realized you probably don't need Espo Troopers for that. They're handy, but you can just put out a 2 damage capacity chud, pay 2. Now the deck has tons of resources, so it's not usually starved. And the Espos aren't necessary. So the question then becomes, what do you run? And so what I've been looking at is Cruel Interrogations, which is pod number 24.
Cruel Interrogations objective. So this is still a Sith objective. It has the reaction, after this objective enter plays, take one card at random from each opponent's hand. Capture those cards at this objective, which is really strong.
Yeah, that is... It's one of those moves that at the beginning of the game, if you get this, you instantly take one card out of their hand. And it's so hit or miss. I've had people pull Luke. I've had people pull total garbage. But when they pull the card that you're planning your entire first turn around, it can be totally devastating.
And on those turns when they get two of them, if you're playing two copies of this and they play both of them come up in that entry and you go down two random cards, that's also really problematic.
Yeah, that's really tough. My favorite card in the pod is Interrogation, which is a 2-cost Sith event with the action, take a look at opponent's hand, choose and discard one from their hand. So if you heard that right, this is not a random discard. This is, hey, what's your best card? It's gone. I'm starting to think this might be the most powerful card in the game.
It is.
And I'll talk about this later in my card of the week choice.
I have had this happen to me in a couple times playing the game where not only have I lost a card at random from Cruel Interrogations, but I'm sitting there first turn and I'm looking at my cards and I'm like, oh wow, I got a Yoda still in my hand. This is going to be pretty good. My whole first turn is going to revolve around putting this Yoda out and getting him like doing some damage and committing him to the Force. And then having that person play Interrogation normally with the Sith event reducing objective so that now he's only actually playing one for it. Maybe 0 if he has 2 of them out, and there goes Yoda, and I'm like, oh well, that was my whole first turn. I don't know what I'm doing anymore now. So yeah, it can be really, really menacing. And so then there are 2 copies of the next card in the objective, which is the Interrogation Droid. And so this is a 3-cost, 2 health capacity unit that has the reaction. After this unit enters play, discard one card at random from each opponent's hand. So this is another random discard. Again, this is kind of like a throwback to what we were talking about before in terms of synergy. This is another card that's synergistic with the objective that it's part of, right? So not only does it, the way I've seen this played really effectively is, you know, the light side player plays a bunch of cards and keeps a couple cards back in their hand for obviously for edge battles, either offensively or defensively. And it comes to your turn, maybe, you know, they, like I said, they have 1 or 2 cards and you play this and take one of their cards at random. Now they only have 1 card in their hand for their the edge battles, and you can start to really run havoc on that. Maybe, you know, depending on what they were thinking, maybe it was the Twist of Fate that they were really relying on. Maybe it was something with a lot of Force icons. You know, they had held back an Obi-Wan, and they were going to play him with 4 Force icons and be like, yes, this is going to be totally awesome. I'm going to win this edge battle and totally bone this guy right here. And then it just doesn't happen because you pull that last card out at random and, you know, if there's only 1 card, it can only be that card. And now you have a free run. You know, they can't play any edge cards. So, you know, you can always just play 1 edge card without any stress or, you know, extra strategy or extra thought and really just kind of take a turn away from your opponent. It also has a tactics icon, which is great.
Yeah, that is great. And in addition to that, he's really frustrating because a lot of the time, since you're drawing 6 or 5 cards, maybe you draw Luke and Obi-Wan, or Luke and Han, or Luke and Trust Your Feelings, and you can't play them both, but you're thinking, oh, this game is just mine now. I'm going to play Luke now. Next turn I play Han, it's over. I've got both of the pieces I need. They are dead. And they play Interrogation Droid, pull Han out, and now you just have Luke. And then he gets burnt down by Force Lightning, and you say, what happened? the game was mine, and now I have nothing?
Yeah, the only downside to this, you know, both this card and the objective is its randomness. So you either have to wait to play it at the right time, you know, like in the scenario I said before, or you just have to play it, and if you don't have any other characters, just play it and hope that you happen to hit something good. I mean, nothing is worse than playing this for three costs, because it's the only thing you have to play, and the only thing that you pull out of their hand is some extra resources they don't need, or one of the other many smaller Jedi characters that are out there.
Yeah, this is one of those cards that I will actually hold. There's just a few cards that I'm willing to hold in my hand, because it's, you don't really want to hold cards, because you want to see that Vader, you want to see that Palpatine. But I'll often hold him for at least a turn to try to set him up for a point where I think he'll be more effective. I was actually running this pod when I first started building Sith, but the three cost at that point was too daunting. I could never get him out. But now that we've shifted the deck to be this monster resource deck, it's really not a problem paying for him anymore. The next card in the pod is Intimidated, and this is a zero-cost enhancement that you can enhance a character unit, and is a forced reaction. After enhanced unit is focused to strike, place one focus token on it. And this is, I think, a really powerful card. Almost every single person I have ever played discards this card to draw other cards. And every time they do that, especially when I'm playing my Jedi deck, I think, are you out of your ever-loving mind? This card is phenomenal. If someone puts out Luke and you drop that on them, guess what? Luke is not able to then pull off his focus token and be unexhausted at the start of the dark side's turn, because when he attacks, he will get two focus icons.
I really like playing this on whatever character my opponent has committed to the Force. You know, you wait, they commit Yoda to the Force, and like, yeah, this is going to be great. I'm going to do all this stuff with it. You know, maybe I'll be able to defend effectively. But you can essentially shut that character down by playing Intimidate on it, because when they strike, because they're committed to the Force, they're already taking two focus icons. So this would be a third. And even with a character with Elite, that's not clearing the next turn. So, you really, as the light side, would then have to think about, in essence, I couldn't defend with Yoda because this card would essentially take Yoda out for two turns. Yeah. And then you can just ignore him. And you just ignore Yoda. And you'd be like, okay, all I have to do is beat the number of Force icons that Yoda has.
Yeah, I actually usually don't put him on Yoda, because my thought is my opponent is not going to block with Yoda anyways. His job is to win the Force. If he blocks with Yoda, I'm really excited, because Yoda's probably going to die. The guy I love to put it on is Obi-Wan, because Obi-Wan is exactly what you said. That elite character that they feel like they can put him on the Force. If they need him, he'll be committed. But it's no downside, because they're going to be taking off two every turn anyway. But the main guy I love to put it on is Han. If you stick it on Han, that's a turn down with Han, period. He doesn't have elite. He has no way to take off an extra focus token. He is basically screwed when you put this card on him.
The last card in the objective set is the ISB Interrogators, who are one cost neutral characters with one damage capacity, who have a character damage icon, and they have shielding. So, you know, they're kind of a mixed bag. It's mostly fodder. I think Tiny would, and I would pretty well consider these guys chuds. They have slightly more interesting nature to them than other chuds. But at the same time, they really are just kind of like, oh, I have an extra one resource. I'm going to play this into play. Maybe I'll get to use the shielding. Maybe it'll just absorb some type of random damage that I have to do.
I'm going to have to disagree with you slightly on these guys. They may be the best chud in the game.
The best chud in the game.
They only cost one. They have a built-in blast icon. And that shielding is really useful. They're not that great against Jedi. The Jedi are just going to come in and mow them down. But, like, for instance, last night I was playing my Y-Wings. Those guys are terrible for Y-Wings. So you go in with two Y-Wings. They block with one Interrogator. They shield the objective. They kill one of the Y-Wings. You only end up getting one damage across if you don't win the edge battle as the light side. So they are, it seems like they're a lot more powerful than I had originally given them credit for. When I first looked at them, I thought, these guys are awful, and they bring this pod down. Now I'm thinking, these guys kind of bring the pot up a bit.
Yeah, I can see that. Still in Chud category for me, though.
Definitely a Chud, just a usable Chud instead of the worthless Chud. So how would you evaluate this pod then on a scale of 1 to 10?
On a scale from 1 to 10, this is probably one of the better pods. I would say it's up there, maybe like an 8, 8.5. It's not the best pod. It's not like the crazy 10 that we gave out before. But I would say it's a very decent pod.
Yeah, I think for me, I'd give it maybe a 7.5, maybe an 8. What it's missing is a really good character to hold it together. Interrogation is phenomenal. But then the rest of the cards are all tool cards, but there's no meat to this pod. So basically, I'm rating it, I'll say a 7.5 based on the strength of interrogation and all useful cards, although no one backbreaking card.
Sure, I agree with that. So let me ask you this question. So I know personally from last week that you were running only one copy of this in your sit deck, and you were still running, so you'd taken out corporate exploitation and put this in as just one copy and still running reconnaissance mission. Are you still running reconnaissance mission, or are you running two copies of cruel interrogations?
No, I'm now running two copies of cruel interrogations. What it came down to is, after playing a little bit, interrogation used properly might be the best card in the game, and the Espo Trooper pod is just not good enough to be better than the best card in the game. So we talked about this before. How good does a card have to be to make it into your deck? And when it's potentially the best card in the game and then has four other useful cards, that is usually going to be enough to get it a slot.
Okay, that works. I use a different pod. I'm not using Cruel Interrogations, even though I think it is one of the better pods in the game. I haven't actually been using the Cruel Interrogations objective pod. I still think it is one of the best pods in the game, but I have fallen on a different side in terms of kind of control strategy and have picked up using the Devastator pod. So that brings me up to 4 Imperial Navy objectives in my Dark Side deck, but I'm not going to tell you about it this week. I'm going to wait till the next podcast and tell you how well it has and has not been working for me.
How about you give them a little teaser? Have you lost with it yet?
I have not lost with it yet, and I really get a lot of satisfaction of blowing an objective out of the sky using the Devastator in one turn.
Very nice. All right. So, Ben, I don't know if you remember, we do this thing that we call the pod quiz. And the last couple weeks, we've kind of given each other softballs as we're memorizing the pods. This week, we're going to bump it up a notch. I've got my random generator in front of me, and I'm going to generate a pod. Let's see what we get. Here we go. Number 18.
Oh, 18. Okay.
So, first of all, what objective are we working with?
So, I think this objective is hit and run.
That is correct.
Yes. Oh, I got it. I was never going to get that. And now you want me to tell you what is about Hit and Run and all the features of Hit and Run that would make it awesome?
How about you just tell me the 5 cards in the pod?
Oh, I just want the 5 cards in it. Okay, so let's see. So there's one of each of the fate cards. So there's a Twist of Fate, Opportunity, and Heat of Battle. And then the other one is the Informants, the ones where they have only edge tactics. They cost 3. Or they not edge tactics. They only have edge icons. They cost 3. And then you get to copy the effects of any fate card that you put into the edge deck while they're participating. Yes, nailed it.
Yes. You messed up the description a bit of Secret Informant, has a unit and blast icon, which is not edge dependent. But either way, I'm very impressed. I don't think I would have done as well as you did with that one. So kudos to you, my friend.
Woohoo! Can't wait for to get you back next week.
I can. Okay, so let's move on to the card of the week. And Ben, what's your choice this week?
So my card of the podcast, I'm going to have to be, I talked about it before and how awesome I thought it was when you actually get to use it. And I hope as the game develops, you'll see more synergy revolving around these types of characters. So my card of the week is the Ewok Scout. It's 2 cost, 1 health capacity. It has an edge-dependent unit blast damage, and then it has the reaction. After this unit is declared as an attacker, target an enemy unit. That unit cannot be declared as a defender during its engagement, which was used against me this week to... It was used against me in such a way that I was just infuriated at these damn Ewoks, and I could have literally strangled one if one was in front of me.
Okay. That's interesting to me that you would pick a card that you seem to be saying is all but unplayable because playing only one copy of this objective, in your opinion, is not a good idea.
That's true, but it's not objective of the week, Tiny. It's card of the week. And the card that this week that annoyed me the most was Ewok Scout.
Okay, fair enough. My card of the week is Interrogation. And I already talked about this card, 2 cost event, basically look in their hand, pull any card you want out. It is so amazing. What is really great about this card is Sith is all about getting the advantage and holding the advantage. And the scary thing for a Sith player is the dial's bumping up, you've got board advantage, but if they just draw that Luke or that Han, they can start obliterating some of your stuff, or perhaps they need a protector. Those 1 or 2 cards that they need. And so Interrogation helps you keep that control. You wait till they draw up, then boom, you play Interrogation, you go in, you pull that Luke they just drew, you pull that Han that they just drew. And it's one more turn of that dial going up and 2 while they sit there and go, I can't wait to draw that big card. And I've had games where I've been able to do Interrogation, next turn, Interrogation. And so each turn I'm pulling that card out, and it's just too much for them to recover from.
One of the key times to play it is after your opponent has actually drawn their cards, but before they move on to the deployment phase, because you have an action window. And that's when you want to hit them before they have a chance to do anything from that point onwards.
Yes, exactly. You do not want to wait till the deployment phase because they will get first action there. And if they're smart, they're going to play their good card first.
Exactly.
All right. So we're going to have a segment, Rules Time, that we have occasionally. And this week's is going to be a bit longer because I've encountered more difficulties. This is especially the case in Octagon games. And what it looks like is that a lot of people have read the rule book. Clearly, they know the general rules. They know how the game works. But when it comes to small rules or keywords, they're just not reading carefully. So I thought I would illuminate a couple issues. So the first rules question revolves around the card Fall of the Jedi. So Ben, what does Fall of the Jedi say?
So Fall of Jedi is the objective for set 19, and it has the words on it exactly say, reaction, colon. After your draw phase begins, place 1 card from your hand on the bottom of your deck.
So I've seen a number of people make a statement that goes something like this. This pod is a phenomenal pod. It has Darth Vader, and it has all these great cards, and it has Fall of the Jedi, which is a double-sided card. Sometimes you don't want to put a card under your deck, but you have to because it's a reaction. What is the problem with that interpretation, Ben?
So the problem with that interpretation is that it's optional. You don't have to take it. You know, so this works for this card. You can play it, you know, after your draw phase begins. You can put a card down there if you want, but you also don't have to trigger this reaction if you don't want to. This in itself is kind of double-edged. Because especially when it comes down to like tournament times, if you forget to trigger something like this, or I see this a lot with the cards that allow you to draw both the objectives on the light side and dark side that allow you to draw at the start of your opponent's turn. If you forget to do that at the right time in the right action point, then you really don't actually get the card automatically. You can't say, oh, it's your, you know, it's now your deployment phase. You've already drawn cards. You've already refreshed. I forgot to draw a card at the beginning of turn. Can I take this? You forgot that reaction. It's your responsibility to trigger it, and you fail to do that.
Yep, it is not a passive effect. It is not a forced reaction. Now, the Rancor is an example of a forced reaction.
Because it has the word forced.
Exactly. So when you're playing and your buddy tries to make you put one under your deck for Fall of the Jedi, say, do you see the word force there? I do not. Okay, so the next rules difficulty that I ran into online, and this person was quite adamant that he was right, and even after I laid everything out for him, he said, well, that's your interpretation, is based around the card TIE Attack Squadron.
So the card that Tiny is referring to is TIE Attack Squadron, which is a Navy 3-cost, 2-health capacity vehicle fighter squadron card. Look at that, all three of those traits. And it has the text, during an engagement in which you have placed at least one fate card in your edge stack, this unit gains unit damage and targeted strike.
Right. So this is really useful. For instance, my opponent defended with the TIE Attack Squadron. He played a Twist of Fate, so he did play an edge card in the stack. We'll have to see what the FAQ says about that, if for some reason that particular edge battle didn't even exist. But it seems like for now we should play that it did exist. So he turns it on. So he is defending. He gives his unit an extra blast unit damage and the keyword targeted strike. But the question comes down to, what is the definition of the keyword targeted strike?
So the definition of the keyword targeted strike has, you can see it on a number of cards that have it, including Luke and Han, who give it to you in little parentheses, a lot like you see in Magic cards. But this is one of those examples where they're assuming you know targeted strike is a keyword and that it is something that is gained and has set rules to it. And so the set rules are, and so the exact wording on targeted strike is, when a card with the targeted strike keyword strikes during engagement, this is the important part, as an attacker, damage from its blast unit icon type may be assigned to one target enemy card, even if that target is not participating in the engagement. So the key word here, and the key to this scenario, is that Tiny's opponent placed an edge card while he was defending. And so targeted strike, even though the card now, even though TIE Attack Squadron now has targeted strike as a keyword, you can't do it as a defender because it only works as an attacker.
What was really confusing for him is that it says right on the card, during any engagement in which you have placed at least blah, blah, blah. And so he's tried to claim, well, it says during any engagement. And so I said, yes, you're right. During any engagement, he will gain targeted strike. The problem is targeted strike is actually only useful as an attacker. But you still gain that blast unit icon, so you are gaining something out of it.
It's interesting here. I mean, this just seems like, you know, as part of the Game of Thrones community, we see this all the time where it just seems like every so often something seems to slip through the cracks that would really clarify in the text of the card, right? It's not like the card has run out of space in this situation. It's not like they were limited on space. And I think they could have really clarified this in two ways. One, if it said the unit gains the blast unit icon and the key word, so that those words are adding the key word. And also here, targeting strike is lowercase, but the targeting strike in the rule book is uppercase T, uppercase S. And so maybe this is a different type of targeted strike that isn't the same as the one that's in the rule book, but we know it is. And it's just, you know, one of those oversights when, you know, unfortunately, when you're relying on maybe one person or even somebody who's volunteering to review all of the text of the cards to make sure that they all work in the rule book or in the flow of the rules of the game can just slip through the cracks.
Yeah, definitely. So the last rules issue that we will address today is regarding Jedi Training and Ancient Monument. And both of these cards have the same text. So for instance, the Jedi Training says this objective contributes one force icon to your side during the force struggle. And I've had actually a number of people email me asking me about this, and this was a debate we had even within our own play group.
And so I was actually on the other side from Tiny and the wrong side. So what I'm about to say here is not the correct interpretation of force struggles or anything like that. So don't play like this. But what I was assuming was that when you did a force struggle, you had to count force icons on a character before you could start adding force icons from things that weren't characters. And so in my mind here, you know, you had to have at least one character committed to the force with at least one force icon. And then once you had that, you can then start adding additional force icons from some other location. In this case, an enhancement or the objective. This is not the case. And so this objective is really great and annoying for the dark, you know, is a great card for the light side, annoying for the dark side if it comes up as one of the initial objectives, because it means that the dark side player has to commit something that's at least two force icons to the force to change the balance of the force, which can be sometimes problematic because a lot of the lower cost characters don't have multiple force icons.
I think every single time I've seen that happen, or on the first turn my opponent has this, I don't actually get the force back that first turn. It's because I'm usually using my first turn to play Mahdi, exhaust him, play more resources, and I'm just not that worried about trying to play a big character that I can then commit. I usually just give up the first turn, say, okay, you get a free damage, I'll come get you next turn.
Yeah, you're just leaving yourself open to all sorts of Jedi mind tricks in that case.
And the reason why we are claiming that it works in that it just adds an icon, period, is, first of all, it doesn't say that you have to have a unit committed. That was an assumption that people have made. And secondly, because we had such a big problem, I emailed FFG and did in fact receive a response that you don't have to have someone committed. It just flat out, it adds one to the force struggle.
Yep.
And the same thing with the ancient monument.
So it can be very strong.
Yeah, I have a friend who has a deck in which he's running these, and they're very good cards. And like we had talked about before, it's one of the ways you can build a Jedi deck. If it had a resource card in it, I'd be much more tempted to build it because, as we've said 1,000 times, the big problem with Jedi is there just aren't enough resource pods.
Yep. That's it for this week. We'll see you in episode 6. May the Force be with you.